It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am doing fine. There's no snow yet coming down, no icy wintry mix, although we might have a little bit later today. And it looks like we're entering a warming trend as we head toward Thanksgiving.
Well, that will probably be welcomed. It's been some nice clear days, and the snow is really pretty, and it's certainly lighted things up. But we'll just take what comes our way.
So I thought we would start with the school board meeting, which happened last night, and also point out to listeners who are wanting to get their meeting fix one way or the other, that they're going to have to wait until after Thanksgiving, because on the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, there are two meetings, Palmer City Council meeting and the Borough Assembly meeting on that Tuesday. But those are the only meetings that those three bodies, the council, the assembly, and the school board, will have in November.
Right. Yeah, it's the way that kind of shakes up. And then we start getting into this conflict of the same meeting nights, which is Tuesday, you know, trying to have the Palmer meeting and on the assembly meeting. And then we'd have to look up, Mike, but the city of Wasilla meets on Monday. So
right.
Could be that they have one next week. We'll have to look that up.
Yep. So last night, the school board started with an early meeting, which was really a work session. And so they did not hold that work session in the big room. There's a smaller room with a table just off the big room. And they had decided that it would be easier to have a work session where you were sitting around the table to have this free flow of discussion. The door was open, so you could go in if you wanted to and observe. But the discussion was aimed at setting legislative priorities, taking a look, I think it'd be simply said, at what is known at the present time about the upcoming legislative session, the kinds of things the district might be interested in. And although I did not sit in on that session, I suspect, considering the changes that have occurred now with a new governor and a new legislature that's been developed. In any case, when they came out and then began the regular meeting at 6, there was no discussion really about the work session because it's as a work session, there were no actions taken specifically.
Right. They usually run those. That's not unusual that they have that small meeting space. I've been to some of those work sessions, and normally they invite the lobbyist if they have hired one for this year, and I'm not sure if they have or not, and he tries to get them, or she, it's always been a he at this point, but guides them on the new makeup of the incoming assembly. And normally it is a committee of the whole. They may give some guidance to the superintendent, some feedback. They will have to look to wrangling in they have pretty much the same flood of, they have the same slate legislators, so they know their ground game pretty good, but there is some changes within the state.
Sure.
So they'll talk a little bit strategically about that, and but no real, even though it's open to the public, it's really not, there's nothing passed or anything like
right.
that.
Right. So then they launched into their meeting, and I can tell you that it was a big room, and it was a little chilly because there were only a few people in there. In fact, I would say that maybe there was one other than people who were involved as staff, or maybe there was, the representatives from various unions, MSCA, and also CEA were there. I might be one of the three people when I was there. We might have been the total of the public that was observing that particular meeting. So it was
that's not uncommon on some meetings like that, unless there's a really hot issue in front of them, particularly the day after an election.
Right.
So not horribly uncommon, and hopefully people were listening on Radio Free Palmer at home, or you know, the stream from the school board. So
right.
Hopefully people were paying attention.
Sure. Well, we can walk through the agenda in part, too, because What they did do was indicate a commitment to a series of educational ideas. One that they would, and they have a goal. They had a district goal of improving student success, and what they were approving and did approve was a $425,000 grant request from the Alaska Department of Education for that was aimed at improving the results of educational opportunities for 3 to 5 year old kids, some professional development, the summer school program, and also expanding that preschool into the homeschool program at Mat-Su Central. And that went by pretty well. That wasn't require much, but it indicates something of what they were interested in doing.
I often think sometimes that grant money is really good leveraging money for federal grants, so they can use other money, you know, free up some money to go after even more funding for those type of things. And I don't think there has been a school superintendent yet that hasn't stressed the importance of pre-K, and that kids getting that first good fundamental start is really an advantage to the later years. So I'm glad they're still going down that track.
And something of interest to you, since you've an interest in the Big Lake area, the Big Lake School has a new elementary teacher who was hired. Apparently, whatever the numbers flow or the staffing there, they approved a new hire as an elementary school teacher. Beginning teacher for the elementary school there.
Yeah, not uncommon with, you know, after the final counts are in, people move around a lot, and not uncommon for that to happen. The Big Lake School goes up and down in size quite a bit, actually. It's a very transient population there. It has been up over 600 kids at some point. And then, but rarely goes under the 400 mark. But a lot of kids check in and check out. It's a Title I school, a lot of challenges. So good that they found another good teacher, and they can use all hands on deck out there.
Well, then they rolled into action items, and they had a number of second readings that had dealt with board policy. The board policy committee, a committee subset of the board, meets and does some pretty extensive work rolling through the policy statements and brings some changes. This happens on a fairly regular basis, so it's not a revision of the entire thing. The first one that was brought forth was the 5000 series, and that had to do with all kinds of things that at first you look at and say, well, okay, I mean, you got to have these rules, but there's a lot of detail here, and it refers to things such as absences and excuses, school attendance boundaries, and student records, and all the rest.
Cell phones.
Sell your phones and similar devices, right? And it's interesting. It reads there: add teacher discretion for using cell phones for instructional purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff that goes on that. Policies dealing with alcohol and other drugs and so on.
Then sexual harassment and dropout. It's a very kind of a grab bag of things.
And Jillian Morrissey did do a short video that had been done at Colony High School about bullying and providing an anti-bullying message. She played that for the school board and the audience, and it was pretty impressive. I thought that did some good work.
It probably should be mentioned at this point, too, that it is a couple of school board members that are selected to work on these revisions. And Debbie Rutherford, who was on the school board up until this last election, I know put a lot of work into this, along with board member Sarah Welton and Yvonne Ruth. And it is not an easy task, because you basically are looking, you're kind of updating it to today's language and today's expectation and changes. So it is really it's a difficult task, and it takes, it's one of those things that not only when you're elected to sit up there every other Wednesday night, there's a lot of this work that good board members do behind the scenes with staff to change policy, which is really kind of the structure of the school district. So bravo for them to bring this forward, and it looks like some really good work was done while Ms. Rutherford was there, and also that they're continuing to approve these kind of things.
And then they rolled into Board Policy 1330, which is use of school facilities, and had been discussed at a previous meeting, and this was a fix of what was described as an unintended consequence of a policy change. But bottom line was, they basically suggested that elementary gyms and common spaces are not in high demand. And so the policy change eliminated the use fee at elementary schools for MATSU nonprofit organizations Monday through Friday. So then there's a little more detail than that, but it was a good that I think that after making a change in the past, they reviewed the reaction to it and realized, oh, this is not quite, we hadn't thought this all through, so they came back and fixed it.
So did they lower the fees, or
eliminated them? Eliminated the use fee at elementary schools for MATSU nonprofit organization, not high schools. Made the differentiation there. But the weekend, for example, if you have a nonprofit youth organization that's going to be meeting on the weekend, there will be still some use fees at elementary schools.
Very, very low, though. I mean, a very low amount. I mean, they do, because of the past changes, there's no custodians have to be called in for these things, and it does require 4 hours of that that they have to pay for. But really, when you think of the space that they're allowed to use and expected wear and tear on the building and somebody having to schedule it, make sure the heat is on when it shouldn't, normally would be off. It's kind of a heavy lift for the school district. And our schools are used for all kinds of things, including church services. So they do have to have a policy and they do have to look at it all the time. I'm not so sure, honestly, by looking at these particular fees that they are a little bit lower than they need to be. It'd be interesting to see how Anchorage is handling their fees and compare them, but it's still probably one of the best bargains in town.
Right. Well, then they moved into non-action items, which were essentially informational reports on a variety of revisions to curricula. And they started with a K-12 art curriculum and wandered on through the rest of it. As an information item, there's a lot of detail there. The second presentation was on information and technology literacy. And then the last one was a new course for the fundamentals of math for people who were having difficulty with math. So all of that was kind of a presentation, very, very interesting. Obviously, an intentional approach to doing a curriculum, by all means. And so they then did they had removed from the agenda a future bond issuances discussion. One of the other students' rights and responsibilities piece got a little bit of an interesting discussion. I, in fact, turned to the internet as I was looking at that. The former principal from Palmer High School, Reese Edwards, spoke to that particular set of changes, revisions to students' rights and responsibilities was discussed. And the central point that I think became very interesting, it typically is, has to do with, if you will, Fourth Amendment rights for students. Can a student essentially be searched for good reason? And then it became kind of a little murky. Well, does a student give up Fourth Amendment rights to be secure in their person when they walk through the school door or not. Well, the Supreme Court back in 1985 acted upon this, and basically that and subsequent local judgments made in a variety of court cases in different states have, I think, said that you basically have to have a good reason to search someone, and the search cannot be too intrusive, and you can't just say, I can search your locker, your person, or your car if I want to, because I have some idea that there's a problem here. So that, I think, is something that has been certainly an issue that has been long discussed, and many particularly experienced administrators understand that in certain circumstances you can conduct a search, but you have to be very careful about that because you can overreach.
So did they have the district attorney there to guide them?
No,
this is just an introduction, so they're going to talk about it more.
Yeah, so there's going to be more about this, I think, here. Well, there was one person speaking from the audience that suggested that, Fourth Amendment rights were given up, essentially. And that's not my opinion. You don't lose your Fourth Amendment rights. What you have is, as a student, Fourth Amendment rights that are, because of the environment within which you're being, still there. So you have protection, but you don't want to give some indication that, for example, you have a weapon of some sort, which if there was an indication from either someone else or something that suggested you had a weapon, that's not going to keep you from being searched, if that's clear.
Yeah, and the title of it is Student Rights and Responsibilities, and I think that's something that sometimes gets overlooked, that when you're using a public space, there are certain responsibilities. You can't do the same thing in a public space you can in your own house. It's owned by all of us. And so a set of ground rules is what we all kind of try to come to agreement on. But I would, this will come up again next time. And it is kind of an in-depth look at a lot of different things regarding, freedom of kids and the freedom and how the district can operate and student records and that sort of thing. So I would really encourage listeners to go on and read that and look at the suggested changes that have been made. All the way down to dress and appearance and, bullying, that sort of thing, and give the district input if you don't like the changes that has come up. But, times change and our surroundings change and our things that we could never imagine happening in our schools are happening. Things are happening different at home now. And so the school has a responsibility to keep up on that. Those trends by changing their own documents. So I think this is going to take a lot of. I'm going to read through it because there is a lot to.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, and I've just touched a little bit, but you're right. When it comes up for further discussion, and I hope that people will have an opportunity to look at that might be affected. For example, there's a simple place there where there's a discussion of dress and appearance, that has been revised significantly. But its impact is the other point here.
Sure.
What has been taken out is something that reads, the Board of Education requires students to attend school in an appropriate dress that meets health and safety standards and does not interfere with the learning process. Well, that's been crossed out in this draft. And what appears there is the Board of Education believes that appropriate dress and grooming contribute to a productive and safe learning environment. Very interesting difference in, statement. The board expects students, and the students have the right to make individual choices. So this suggests something more than the requirement that you do this. So very, very interesting. And then the whole prohibited clothing. There's an entire section on prohibited clothing has been crossed out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at saying, okay, And of course, the student representative on the school board has been very, very active in participating. And I think you're going to hear more from her and through her from the student body about these changes and how they feel about it. So,
yeah, it's good that they are active in this. It has a lot, really affects them a lot, as it does the teachers that teach them. A couple other things in that section, Mike, that were kind of interesting to look at were the difference, some of the crossouts that came, and I'm assuming this came after the results, some of the results on the election yesterday on their legislative and administrative priorities. What their ask is going to be. They had started out determining they on FY20 if they wanted a one-time request for $125 to the student-based allocation, and now they've dropped that down to 2% increases in every year, and just some difference. You can just tell that there's been some changes of rationale now on what the expectation can be. And the other one that you kind of referred to that has made a lot of noise that looks like is being pulled back is that resolution in support of school bond debt that was to had been passed by the other school board prior to this to ask the borough to with the ability to issue bonds to buy existing rental property that we had charter schools in and build a bus barn and that sort of thing. And there was a lot of community backlash for that. I don't think people totally understood it. It had not come before the assembly yet, but that's the one I think they pulled off for maybe some more community work on. But that looks like the one that, had been getting a lot of buzz around town.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it was an interesting meeting.
Yeah, it was. And at first glance, if you were to look at that, unless you realize that these first readings reveal what's coming up as potentially a very intensive discussion. And I think this one will do that. Well, citizen lobbyists.
Policy changes always are.
Yes.
Yeah, let's just kick in here for a second, Mike, that you referred to the fact there's not any meetings with the assembly till the end of
regular assembly meeting, right?
Yeah, regular assembly meeting the 27th. And you look at the calendar of the public meetings is on the borough website. There's not very much next week at all over there. They've canceled a lot of board of supervisor meetings and wastewater septic meetings and that sort of thing, which is good for me because I won't be in town in state next week. It also should be said that the city of Wasilla has canceled their regular meeting for Monday the 12th, but it is also City Hall's closed because it's Veterans Day. So that's part of the calendar problem that we have is we do have a holiday in there.
Right, right.
So maybe it'll be a good time for us to look ahead a little more, Mike, and on future conversations and what might end up on the docket, so it'll get real busy at the end of the year here.
Got it. Okay, well, thank you, citizen lobbyist. We walked through this one pretty well, and I hope you stay warm and safe out there as the temperatures wander up and down and may get a little bit of snow and a lot of sun and who knows what.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests did not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.